It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you. That's the way it sounded. Even though you may not recognize the particulars of that, you will in a second, because that was February of 2011. You say you still don't remember? Well, if I said it took place in the capital of Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, where nearly 100,000 people gathered to protest Scott Walker's imminent decision regarding the state employees unions, that would remind you, wouldn't it? How they camped in the capital, they banged the drums, they defecated in hallways, and they pretty much occupied the place for weeks. We all watched that, and we wondered why nobody did something about it. It was just a stunning development. But I have to tell you that that was just the tip of the iceberg. So many things happened as a result of that and as a result of Scott Walker finally signing that bill. It was called the Wisconsin Budget Repair Bill, or Wisconsin 10, and it basically changed the compensation for employees' unions. And changed a lot of things for them, changed the way the rules were handled. And it was so controversial, it caused that kind of a demonstration. But it was so controversial that it actually nearly broke down, I'd say, the social fabric, certainly for people in Wisconsin who believe in free speech and freedom, just freedom, the First Amendment, just in general. It's a story that I don't think you probably know. It's a story that is really stunning. And just now we are hearing details of it, because details have been released in the last few weeks. I just had it come to my attention, and I wanted you to hear the whole story, because you're not going to believe this. And I think we have to understand that if the left should have its way, this is just a glimpse into what it would look like. Well, during that time, 35 different Republican senators or office holders in Wisconsin who were supporting Scott Walker were targeted in various ways, and so were private citizens. And I'll get to the private citizens in just a second, but I've asked this morning to join me a state senator who was serving during that time, State Senator Leah Vukmir. By the way, Leah is one of those 35 Republicans that were targeted. She is the mother of two kids. She is a nurse, a military mom. Her son serves in the military. She is I don't know if I said this, but she's the daughter of Greek immigrants and a lifelong Wisconsinite. And she's been serving in the state Senate there as a conservative for a very long time. Senator Vukmir, thank you for joining me this morning.
Well, good morning, Sandy. Thank you for having me on the air.
My pleasure. What was your position on that budget repair bill that was so controversial?
Yes, it was called Act 10. It was our collective bargaining reforms. And the unions came into our Capitol, as you described, and I have to admit, just listening to the audio of that brought back a flash of, raw nerves and feelings of what it was like to walk into that building day in and day out with armed security, leaving the building through secret passageways that I never even knew existed in the Capitol. I had just gotten elected to the state Senate. And this was my my entree as a freshman legislator. And it was a very, very much an intimidation game on the part of the unions and the left, who were very upset that Scott Walker won that election and that for the first time in many years, we had the majority in both houses. And so this was their attempt to make us cower. I supported the governor wholeheartedly. It was a very difficult time for all of us in the legislature. Not everyone was there at the beginning because the intimidation was so intense. But I supported the governor from the beginning and worked very hard to get my caucus members to support it. And we eventually did pass what was is now called Act 10.
And you know what, quickly before we go into the particulars, we've, you know, many years, what, 5 years since then, something like that. What has been the net result in Wisconsin of passing that bill?
Well, it's truly been remarkable, Sandy, the effect and the amount of savings that have been realized, the local control that we have given back and flexibility that we have given back to local units of government, to school boards. It has been amazing. And the contrary to the cry that the ceilings are going to fall and that it will be the end of the world as we know it, and nothing like that has happened. The unions have really markedly decreased in their strength and their power as a result. And we went on to do many more reforms like right to work. We really believe this was an issue of freedom and letting individuals decide whether or not they want to belong to unions. And we've had an amazing run here in Wisconsin. I've been very proud to be a part of it.
All right, but not without a price being paid. And we want to go back to that because we started out with those intimidating protests. And, of course, we have a right to protest as Americans. But this was an act of intimidation, and it was also trying to stop the work of the legislature. But it got worse. And I let me just ask you, when did you first hear about what became known as the John Doe investigations?
Well, I've known about the first two John Does, and I know that you will be having Eric O'Keefe on later, and he can go into more details about that. But literally what happened was a third investigation, which I just found out about within the last week. And what we found out is that the Government Accountability Board, which is an organization that was set up, it was statutorily created to oversee elections and ethics, had expanded their power even after they were told to shut down their original investigations into Governor Walker, that their investigations were ruled unconstitutional. They continued their political witch hunt into elected officials and staff members in the building, people that aligned with the governor. Now, this Government Accountability Board wasn't very accountable, and I, as a lawmaker, led the charge to dismantle the organization, the agency, and it was my piece of legislation. And because of my involvement in that, I was put right into the sight of those attorneys and people that worked at that accountability board, and that is why I became a target of their investigation, where I just found out within the past week that all of my emails from 2009 to 2012 were downloaded to a hard drive without my knowledge. I never received any notice of a warrant. I did not receive any notice of a subpoena. Further, making it even more horrifying, 150 of my emails private. Again, I want you to understand, Sandy, these are private emails. These are not our state account emails, which are subject to open records. Private emails, 150 of them between my daughter and me, many of them having sensitive information, medical information, were put into a file entitled Opposition Research. I am just horrified to think that a government agency could abuse its power to that extent.
Well, so now you know about it, but they still have it, right?
Well, interestingly, Sandy, that hard drive that everything was downloaded onto is missing. It was also kept in an unsecure location.
Maybe Lois Lerner and the IRS knows where it is, because they, you know, well, they lose lots of their emails. So, and maybe Mrs. Clinton, excuse me. But all right, so they've lost the hard drive. This sounds familiar.
They've lost the hard drive. It was kept in an unsecure location. We have no idea how many people had access to these emails. And again, there were about 500,000 emails of the elected officials, staff members that were involved in this recent John Doe 3. And I just want you to understand, and I want your listeners to understand, that the reason I took on the dismantling of the GAB was because of the corrupt the corrupt nature of what they had done in the original John Doe investigations, the political witch hunt into Governor Walker and those conservative organizations that aligned with the governor. And it was because of that that I became involved in reforming and dismantling, and that's what put me in this position. And you know what? I would take that vote again in a heartbeat because it was the right thing to do. But it is such an illegal, corrupt, unconstitutional method of actions by a government agency. And this is not America. This isn't the America that I grew up to love and the America that my father came to because of the freedoms that we have here. And so I think it's very important that we speak out about it. I'm grateful that you're giving me this opportunity to let your listeners know, because the price of freedom means that we must have the responsibility to be vigilant to protect that God-given right.
Yeah, and let me just say that Leah has written this out in an article that was in the Wall Street Journal that just came out yesterday, 2 days ago. And it's called An Attack on My Privacy in Wisconsin's Political War. We're going to put it on our Facebook page so that you can share it. By the way, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to get into more of the story, but this is the part that intersects State Senator Lukmer. And the interesting thing is, Leah, you talk about your emails, you talk about your exchanges with your daughter, and we all know we have kids, and we know that we have private exchanges with our children, our husbands, our friends, and all of those things now could potentially become public. And I think that's all the more complicated because you have declared your intention to run to challenge, I think, Tammy Baldwin as senator for the state of Wisconsin. So when they say opposition research, they mean it. They mean that they will go into your email and use that against you, and that's pretty frightening, isn't it?
It's very horrifying. It is frightening. It is corrupt. But it does confirm why I am running for the U.S. Senate. It does steal my resolve to fight these types of abuses at any level of government. And, you know, we have to be concerned about it at the federal level, state level, and at the local level. It's wrong at every level. And despite the fact that I've become a target, I am working very hard here in Wisconsin to look at all options, be they legislative, be they personal legal options. But more than anything, what I'm trying to do and what you have given me the opportunity to do here is to sound the alarms so that people everywhere in this country recognize how important it is for us to stand up and be aware of potential abuses by our government, and the overreach that happened here could happen anywhere.
You know, when you grew up in Wisconsin, were you aware of Wisconsin history in terms of its link to communism, the foundings of communism in this country, and the fact that it's off the charts? It's interesting because Wisconsin is a state full of red, literally, conservatives, and also the left that's, you know, nearly plunging off the cliff. Were you aware of that, Leah?
It's certainly hard not to be, and especially being the daughter of Greek immigrants and having a father who came to this country in search of the American dream, and he certainly made sure that we were aware of it. You know, there was an experience that happened to me when I was 14 years old, and I went back to Greece with my family, with my mother and my grandfather, who had come to America many, many years before. But it was during the 70s when there was a military takeover of the government. And I will never forget, as a young 14-year-old, a teenager who was enjoying the freedoms of living in this great country of America, to be thrust into a situation in Greece where my grandfather was asking questions of my cousin, and my cousin wouldn't let him speak until he ushered him out of the apartment and drove us to the ocean where we could walk along the seashore, and then he felt comfortable to speak about his government.
Wow.
I thought to myself, wow, you know, how can that be? And yet here today in our country, how is what happened to me and to all the others who have been involved in this any different?
I don't know. And that's why we have to stop it. State Senator Leah Vukmer, and you'll hear more of, I'm sure we'll be talking again, Senator Vukmer, with your permission, as your
Absolutely.
Race gets further along. But that's her part of the story, this John Doe investigation. But unbelievably, it actually got worse. If they could be worse. So stay tuned. We'll get to that next. Thank you, Senator Vukmer. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
Today, the crowds grew to nearly 40,000. For the second day, the Capitol is paralyzed. Key Democrats are still missing in action, holding up a vote on the governor's proposed cuts in benefits and bargaining rights. Today, Wisconsin troopers went looking at the home of one missing lawmaker, but he and his colleagues were holed up at this hotel across the border in Illinois.
This might be the only option we really have to try to say to the governor, let's slow this down. You're ramming this through.
The budget showdown here hits home for the Thompsons. Jim, retired after teaching for 31 years in Wisconsin schools. Nancy, a retired nurse and school employee.
I don't think we've ever been coddled, ever. We work very, very hard for what we do.
As former state workers, they see their pensions and health care as hard-earned trade-offs for decades making modest paychecks.
We've taken less pay for the benefits. So now simply to cut our benefits is just unjust and totally unfair.
We all in this economy have to take pay cuts.
In Monroe, Wisconsin, 50 miles from Madison, deli owner Kim Lee agrees with the governor's budget cuts. He has little sympathy for state workers given his own family's health care costs.
I pay $380 a month. No wellness, no dental, no eye. $5,500 deductible per person. There's four in my family.
Madison has now become a magnet in the national and emotional debate over budget priorities, drawing figures like the head of the entire AFL-CIO.
Teachers didn't cause Wisconsin's budget problems.
All right, that's a report from Fox. And, of course, that was a long time ago. That was right after 2011 when we first started talking about the occupying of the Wisconsin State Capitol by the unions. So that gives you an idea of where the positions were on both sides of the issue in terms of the citizenry. But what you can't possibly know is what lengths the left went to intimidate and destroy those people that were supporting Scott Walker in these new union rules or this law that would change how they were compensated and some other things in regard to them. And I want to go into that now. Because our next guest was at front and center in all of this. But before I introduce him, I want to give you a couple of stories. This was in National Review, dated April 2015. But these stories, I believe, took place beginning in 2012, when private citizens who were conservatives, private citizens who associated themselves with conservative groups, began to be raided, their homes overrun by SWAT teams. Let me just read you, in the early morning hours, pulled out of bed, unbelievable circumstances. Let me give you a few examples. Cindy Archer, who was one of the lead architects of Wisconsin's Act 10, this is her story. She was jolted awake by yelling, loud pounding at the door, and her dog's frantic barking. The entire house, the windows and walls, were shaking. She looked outside to see up to a dozen police officers yelling to open the door. They were carrying a battering ram. She wasn't dressed, but she started running toward the door, her body in full view of the police. Some yelled at her to grab some clothes. Others yelled for her to open the door. I was so afraid, I didn't know what to do. She grabbed some clothes, opened the door, and dressed right in front of the police. The dogs were still frantic. I begged and begged, please don't shoot my dogs. Please don't shoot my dogs. Just don't shoot my dogs. I couldn't get them to stop barking. And so then she talks about how they raided her house. They went into the bathroom where her partner was in the shower. They left carrying with them only a cell phone and a laptop. This is another person, not her real name because she still won't speak. She's called Anne in this article. Someone was pounding at her front door. It was early morning, very early. It was the kind of heavy pounding that meant someone was either fleeing from or bringing trouble. It was so hard I'd never heard anything like it. I thought someone was dying outside. She ran to the door, opened it, and then chaos. People came pouring in. For a second, I thought it was a home invasion. It was terrifying. They were yelling and running into every room in the house. One of the men was in my face yelling at me over and over. It was indeed a home invasion, but the people who were pouring in were Wisconsin law enforcement officers. Armed, uniformed police swarmed into the house. Plainclothes investigators cornered her and her newly awakened family. Soon, state officials were seizing the family's personal property, including each person's computer and smartphone. I could go on with that story, but this is what they said in each of these cases. The officials, the people, the entities that invaded the homes without warning said, don't speak of this, don't call your lawyer, don't tell anyone about this raid, not even your mother, your father, or your closest friends. I'm going to give you one more. The Rachel. The ordeal began before dawn with the same loud, insistent knocking. Still in her pajamas, Rachel answered the door and saw uniformed police. When Rachel asked to wake her children, the officer insisted on walking into their rooms. The kids awoke to an armed officer standing near their beds. Neighbors went by. They saw them pulling things out of the house. The school bus went by, and yet they were warned. They couldn't say anything about it. That was a portion of what's been called the John Doe investigations. And one of the persons who was caught up in this is a man named Eric O'Keefe. Eric is a political activist, an author. He's the director of the Club for Growth in Wisconsin and also chairman of Citizens for Self-Governance. And I've asked him to join us this morning because there's new information on these cases. And I wanted him not only to explain what did happen, but what's going to happen. Eric, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
Where did your life intersect all this mess? What was your part in this?
Well, I was running the Wisconsin Club for Growth when the budget reform was proposed in February of 2011. You may recall the sweeping elections of 2010. Going into those, we had a Democratic governor, Democratic Senate, Democratic State Assembly here. All of those flipped over to Republican, and they came out with a reform agenda to close a budget gap, and to allow local governments to have more authority over their own affairs. That was Act 10. The Wisconsin Club for Growth quickly became the leading voice defending that reform. And so in February, we were up at the radio ads. We were very active in 2011 and 12. There were recall fights against state senators who voted for this. And the Wisconsin Club for Growth was the leading independent voice defending those state senators. And then Scott Walker himself faced a recall and with national attention in 2012. And on June 5th, he won that election handily. And in early August of 2012, less than about 2 months after he successfully defended himself, they launched what's called here John Doe 2. They launched John Doe 2. To try to overturn the election, basically. It's a pre-run of what's happening nationally, in my view, but the permanent government here, at least it seemed permanent, the Government Accountability Board and a Democratic district attorney teamed up and ran a domestic spying operation coast to coast, not from border to border of Wisconsin. They grabbed emails of people who never lived in Wisconsin, nationally prominent people who were supporting us. We didn't know until October 3rd of 2013, but it did start in August of 12. October 3rd of 13 was, there were four family homes raided in the dark with groups like what you described, and the most appalling attack on fundamental rights that I've ever witnessed in our politics. And here's one of the most scary things about this whole fight. By the way, we've subsequently won in court and in the legislature. But even until today, this to me is the most worrisome lesson. The newspapers here opposed the reforms. They never criticized the home raids. And the Democrats in the legislature have uniformly opposed the reforms. And even today, they attack, when we win in court, they attack the judges. They've attacked this report that disclosed the secret spying on Leah Vuckmer, Democrats in the assembly. So we have this divide that we're also seeing play out nationally, where the Democrats, and I'm not talking voters, I'm talking leading elected Democrats, will not accept the normal process for resolving political disputes in America, elections or judicial decisions. They don't accept them, and they continue to vilify us. So we have this rift in Wisconsin and nationally where how do we resolve a disagreement when one side won't accept election results?
You know, it's funny you should say that because I think that what we saw in Wisconsin, and we're not done talking about that, was a glimpse of what was going to happen nationally. I don't think any of us had any way of knowing the chaos that would ensue as a result of an Obama presidency. In all of the departments and the IRS, now the abuses we're seeing in the FBI, they're coming to light, all of these things. It's just the corruption going down, targeting conservatives and private citizens. We saw it in Wisconsin first, really. And I agree with you. I think it's a template for what will happen, the things to come, as it were. And also, Eric, we can see that the left never stops. They never stop. They may be quiet. They may go underground for a while, maybe. But they never stop.
And they've abandoned the constitutional parameters that used to govern both the Republican and Democratic parties until sometime in relatively recent past, and I think it was under the Obama administration. So, for my own personal role, they had planned to raid my home, but they did not. They thought the sheriff here in rural Wisconsin was too political, unquote, meaning he's a Republican, and they didn't think he would help break down my doors. So they subpoenaed me while raiding the homes of my colleagues that same morning.
Wow.
That subpoena included a notorious gag order wherein I was ordered to speak to nobody except my attorney about I could tell nobody that I received a subpoena and nobody the contents of the 7-page subpoena listing 29 organizations asking for all of my emails back to 2009. All of my emails with numerous state and national conservative groups and leaders. And I went and complained to a lot of people about this, including the Wall Street Journal editorial board. And they broke the story of this in November of 2013 with a dramatic editorial. And I then led a litigation fight, both defense and offense, I spent full time exposing and stopping the John Doe abuses for 3 years. The total tab for legal and defending my colleagues and our network of people was $12 million, by the way,
wow.
Plus 3 years of my life.
Wow. All right, so let's make use of that great sacrifice and let's tell the story a little bit more. Eric, if there was a gag order, all these people were warned, and they were scared out of their minds, being dragged out of their beds early in the morning, and they were told not to tell anyone, not to explain anything. And I would say they're pretty successful. I think most Americans have no idea. So how did you know? Did somebody, dare to pick up the phone and tell you they'd been raided? You don't have to name a name, but did somebody call you? How did you find out?
Well, they were so they were stunned by it, and look, the play is seize, freeze, and smear. That was the approach of the Government Accountability Board. So it's very intimidating to discover that all of your electronic documents are in the possession of your adversaries and that they are ruthless and lawless, right? Because it puts them in a tremendous position to embarrass or smear you or leak it. And here's another way to look at it, and this is why most people even today remain quiet about what happened to them. If you find out you're the target of a criminal investigation, as I was and we were, you're the target of a criminal investigation, turn that into a good story. Talk to a reporter and make that a good story. It's very difficult, and most people were rationally quiet. They knew that the papers here were colluding with the prosecutors. They weren't biased left-wing. They were meeting with and serving the prosecution. They're just the communications organs of the prosecution here. So they were frozen, and I had enough experience and enough of a network built over 30 years of activism that I could go outside of the state for communication. And we have great talk radio in state. We would not have prevailed without our talk radio outlets in the state of Wisconsin. So and the modern digital communications were essential too. But we won without ever having any support from the old media in the state of Wisconsin. But how did I find out? After a few days, people didn't have attorneys, by the way, so they were seeking attorneys. I had a law firm out of Kansas City, Graves Garrett, and we began seeking attorneys for the people who needed attorneys. And in the course of that, we quickly developed a kind of a team approach. But the targets did talk to me privately over a period of time as I earned their trust as an advocate and as someone who could help line up legal representation. So I ended up being extremely highly informed quickly. And you know, when I broke it to the Wall Street Journal, I did tell them about the home raids. So you're right, somebody talked to me about the home raids, people who were highly informed being the victims. And by the way, this gag order has been lifted both by the court and statutorily. This attack was called by our state Supreme Court. It was said to have been conducted without foundation in reason or law.
That's all right, Eric, let's pick up with that when we return. Eric O'Keefe is my guest, and we're talking about the dreaded John Doe criminal operation that took place in Wisconsin in the wake of Scott Walker's election, in the wake of the stand he took on against the unions. It's just an amazing story, and we haven't even quite told all of it. And the reason I'm telling it is because this is America, for heaven's sake. And this is what the left will do everywhere, given the chance. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The documents released today show last December prosecutors looking into Governor Scott Walker's campaign said the scope of the criminal scheme under investigation is expansive. In a filing, prosecutors say Walker and his campaign illegally coordinated campaign activities with a dozen other organizations. One of those was the Wisconsin Club for Growth, a conservative economic activism group. Documents name R.J. Johnson as an advisor. At the same time, they show Johnson also worked for the Walker campaign. Thursday, Walker didn't deny that.
We've used him in the past. We've had a fairly narrow role as a consultant. I don't see that changing in the future.
The documents also say Walker sent an email praising Johnson to Karl Rove, a national conservative organizer. That email made prosecutors wonder just how far the campaign coordination went. Walker said he couldn't recall that email.
I have not seen that. I don't know what specifically they're talking about, but I can't imagine that.
No charges were filed against Walker or his staff in this investigation. Both state and federal judges have temporarily stopped the investigation, saying no violations of campaign law occurred. Walker says the judges got it right. He defended his campaign's actions on the internet and in an interview.
The people can say or do whatever they want. I think, to me, an objective third party, a separate branch of government, the judiciary of both the state and the federal level have made it clear that they felt that there wasn't a case here.
But the Democratic National Committee says Walker needs to come clean. It said in a statement, the documents released today raise more questions than answers about Scott Walker's misconduct during his first term. That statement went on to say it is not only troubling and potentially illegal, it is a clear violation of the public's trust.
All right, that's a report from WLUK. I think it probably demonstrates what our guest Eric O'Keefe has said, that the media was propagandizing for the left on this whole issue. That's what the people of Wisconsin heard. Let me read to you something. Moving forward to 2015, the Supreme Court ruled 4-2 that they shut down this John Doe investigation. Now, this is 2014. And let me just read to you what Justice Michael Gableman had to say, at least one thing. He said, it is utterly clear that the special prosecutor has employed theories of law that do not exist in order to investigate citizens who were wholly innocent of any wrongdoing. In other words, the special prosecutor was the investigator of a perfect storm of wrongs that was visited upon the innocent targets and those who dared associate with them. And then he goes on to say, the threat to free expression created by overbroad statutes is that, by potentially sweeping in constitutionally protected activity, individuals and groups may self-censor out of fear of vindictive or selective prosecution. And so that was just a portion. The judges, 4-2, ruled in favor of the victims of this John Doe investigation. And in the same article by the Wall Street Journal, it says, particular credit goes to Eric O'Keefe, director of the Wisconsin Club for Growth, who took a personal risk by breaking the John Doe's gag order to go on the record with us in 2013 about the subpoenas. His legal challenges in Wisconsin and in a federal lawsuit aided by Kansas City law firm Graves and Garrett and David Rifkin of Baker Hostetler brought the constitutional issues into public focus. And so that's the basis upon which Eric O'Keefe, the aforementioned person, joins us this morning. Eric, we appreciate all that you've done, really, on behalf of Wisconsin and the nation. But the story is not over yet. We just heard this week, the reason it came to my attention is because, as I understand it, in my inbox, I had this this tweet. It says, "Judge unseals Wisconsin DOJ's report on leaked materials from the John Doe witch hunt." What exactly does that mean, and was that significant?
Oh, yes. Our attorney general here conducted a lengthy report. It was triggered by looking into a leak of over 1,300 pages of documents to the left-wing publication of London, The Guardian. By the way, it's significant that the leftists here would go to London to try to overturn the Constitution. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's back to the future, right? So they were looking into that, but what they found is many other crimes and offenses. And this report does raise, 90 pages long, it raises more questions than it answers. And they included therein a list of, a list which is not comprehensive. In other words, it doesn't include everybody. 218 subpoenas and warrants to seize information during these John Does. And it is therein that your previous guest, Leah Vukmir, discovered that she had been spied upon and that her personal emails with her daughter were selected and put into a file. It also disclosed for the first time the seizure of the emails of some nationally significant leaders, Leonard Leo of the Federalist Society, and Nick Ayers, who today is chief of staff to Mike Pence. He earlier was executive director of the Republican Governors Association. Nick Gillespie's emails were seized, and many, many others in and out of Wisconsin. And that's why I say this was a nationally ambitious attack. And here's one of the – there's so many scary elements, but – these warrants to seize emails were signed by one judge here at the request of a district attorney. Every county in the country has a district attorney with substantial power. Went to one state judge and asked for search warrants to seize the emails, and those warrants went to the internet service providers who were told they couldn't tell their customers. So this is secret domestic spying. They went to AOL, Yahoo, Google, all the big guys, grabbed everybody's emails. My search warrant for my emails asked for all emails sent, received, and deleted, address books, calendar, method of payment, passwords, everything that the internet service provider had going back to 2009. Everything.
And so they've got yours too?
Yes.
And Leonard Leo's then?
Yes.
Oh, my word. You know, all right, so, and just to put this in perspective for people that don't recognize Leonard's name, Leonard is the head of the Federalist Society, and that's the organization that has done, along with Heritage Foundation, the vetting of judicial nominees for President Trump. So Leonard has a very important position and is in possession of lots of very important information that I'm sure he would not want released on his email. And then, of course, the Senator Vukmir just told us a few minutes ago that the hard drive upon which those email were loaded has disappeared. So it's gone, right?
Yeah, it's gone, and yes. And so one of the things the Attorney General wrote in his report is that they cannot guarantee that this information isn't already in anybody's hands. In other words, they will never know the parameters of who has this data, and they can't discover it. And interestingly, they declined to file charges against any individual for the leaking because so many different people could have done it.
This is unbelievable. And then also we have to talk about the national implications, which we did a bit with Leonard. But you indicated to me that the FBI was involved in this. In what way?
Well, you read some from the National Review story about the Cindy Archer raid where she said, "Don't shoot my dogs, don't shoot my dogs." That was an earlier round of raids in September of 2011 in what's called John Doe 1. In 2011, there was a John Doe that had pursued Walker for years, and the FBI was heavily involved in it. I am very curious about the extent of the involvement. A neighbor took a photograph during the Archer raid of an FBI agent, and the headlines around the state were FBI raids home of former Walker aide. So the FBI was involved in that, and the FBI had agents at many of the interrogations in John Doe 1. But they were up to their ears in that, and that was started in 2010. It ended in 2013, And during the entire period, the director of the FBI was Robert S. Mueller III.
That's just breathtaking. Really, that's just breathtaking. Because first of all, how could the FBI be involved in a state matter? I don't, that even just that very basic question. How could that concern the FBI that a state governor was allegedly, we'll use the word colluding because that's really what they were saying, was cooperating with conservative groups? That's all in state. I mean, I don't understand why the FBI would have any involvement at all. Do you?
Well, here, let me draw a distinction here for because you listened well. In the first round, they were ostensibly looking into public corruption. So in the first round, they really were trying to throw Scott Walker out of office. And that's why I'm really bothered by the FBI's involvement, because I know from extensive discovery and years of work that that it was a raw political motive to destroy Scott Walker. That's what motivated them. But they're under cover of political corruption, which they failed to find. That's why they raided Cindy Archer's house. She was never charged. So why the FBI didn't smell the rat there, or whether they actually knew the motive was to get Scott Walker, I would like to know that. The FBI did not have a role in the second phase when it narrowed down to supposed collusion. And by the way, much like the current probe into the Trump administration, they were trying to find out whether we illegally coordinated with the Walker campaign. We did not, but if we had, it would have been legal. And similarly, there isn't actually a law against collusion on the national level. And the Trump campaign did not collude with anybody overseas. But if they had, it's not clear it would have been illegal.
Yeah, so, but that seems to be beside the point. They make up new crimes and they make up new things. Just like the Supreme Court justice quote that I read a few minutes ago, that they're finding new laws that aren't even written. New statutes, so they make up wording. It's just amazing. It's really lawlessness is really what it is. So
it is.
Fast forward, we're in 2017. This current Justice Department, have they made any rumblings about being involved in that investigation? Do they have any intersection with this?
Do you mean the federal?
Yes.
No. No, I've heard nothing. And this is all, you know, the Attorney General report we're discussing was by the state of Wisconsin Attorney General, and I've seen no national involvement. I will mention, though, in terms of the federal government, while we prevailed in state court, shut this down, and got that great decision you read from, I've been involved in three civil rights cases to try to impose consequences on the perpetrators of these crimes, and they have all failed in federal court. The Seventh Circuit is bad, and I have been denied even the right to have a trial to go into the prosecutorial and investigatory abuses here. So I'm very concerned about the implications for the country. In other words, those raids, the people who conducted and authorized those raids have been held to have prosecutorial immunity, investigatory immunity, qualified immunity. They've gone to court, and the judges have said, that's okay, even if they were politically motivated, and this is literally the case. The Seventh Circuit has said, even if they were politically motivated, because a judge signed a search warrant, it's okay what they did. They're protected.
All right, so John Chisholm, who was the DA from Milwaukee County, the Democratic DA, who led a lot of this, and then I don't know the other name of the, there was another person, right, two particular people in charge of this?
Well, Francis Smith was nominally the head as the special prosecutor. He really was just a guy who signed the briefs that were written by John Chisholm's lieutenants and by the Government Accountability Board. So under this whole thing, they pretended they had a special prosecutor, and he was a front guy for an operation jointly conducted by John Chisholm, who is still the district attorney in Milwaukee, and the now eliminated Government Accountability Board.
He is still the DA. See that? I had no idea. He's still. No justice, nothing. He's still there, the one that propagated all of this, at least the person, the personification of the person that did the John Doe investigations. You know, how in the world could they have, I'm asking you legal questions now, but I don't understand how they could have ordered people to say nothing to anyone about anything.
Well, that was an unconstitutional gag order. By the way, the threat was that I would be held in contempt of court, which has a penalty of up to 1 year in jail and $10,000 fine per instance. I defied it with the confidence that it was unconstitutional. It had been held to be constitutional in a prior state Supreme Court decision in Wisconsin. It had never been upheld in federal court. So it was, you know, un-American and unconstitutional laws can stay on the books a long time until somebody challenges them.
All right, so the story continues, and we just have a minute left. Just can you quickly tell me, how are things in Wisconsin? Are people still supporting Scott Walker? Have things shifted? Do you think the left has gained more power? What do you think?
Well, Scott Walker's running for re-election. Next year he'll be up for re-election. Our economy is booming. Our unemployment is at the lowest in a long time. It's below the national average. His reforms have been very successful. On the political front, though, it's a microcosm of the United States of America, where also the economy is booming and things are going pretty well. But the left is completely unrepentant, and the most distressing thing is that I don't know a single person who has publicly changed their mind on what I did in defense of these reforms.
All right.
There are many people, including...
Eric, we're out of time. Eric O'Keefe, what a great, incredible story. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.